cookies.
I don't think so. Go ahead. If you
got a man cookie.
Well, my concept about photography, the philosophy about it, I think has pretty much always been the same. There are some variations so far as maybe approaches or even in trying to polish up the visual methods of saying it. But it's always been primarily deep concern about people in all in their many kinds of needs that they face, that they have to cope with, which can be involved in the social and economic, or some of the religious world, spiritual, but how it all affects the whole person. And realizing that there are many people in the world with many different kinds of problems, that area has been the place that has always drawn me the most. In fact, I would think perhaps that I've always been drawn to the people who have needs, who have who are sometimes misunderstood, and the people who are normally on the lower rung of the ladder. Of course, in photography and work, you know, all facets from the very famous to whatever going down, and but it is at the place of who people are in their needs that I am most concerned about photography, and I think is the reason why that I've been involved in the religious area of photography is because at that point when the religion is doing its best, when it's at its best, that's where it is striving to reach the needs of people. And I've been able to find a lot of situations and a lot of people, a lot of places with their needs and with messages that they need to say and want to say to other people, like the King's Handmaid, where they don't have a voice, they don't have the opportunity to communicate to others what it's like to be in poverty, what it's like to live without things that other people have around them, how they cope with it, and that kind of thing. So it is in the King family experience that I guess the peak is shown the best there, because that is such an example of people who have dignity and they have a lot to offer to the world around them, and yet who've never been able to show it. They have kept their dignity in spite of everything, which it would break, but they've never been able to have a voice to speak. And it's an exciting thing to me, like all of the things that have happened because of that one story and how it's been used and continues being used, like we're talking about using it now, for example. Well, the thing that's real interesting is how many people can be reached in that way. Like, for example, people in Portugal have told me how they were moved by the King Famine. People in Africa have talked about what the King family did to them, the experience of knowing them. Just the other day in Rio in Brazil, my family talked to me quite at length about it because they have been moved by the King family, and so they became a voice because the photography allowed them to do it, and hopefully I was a channel there somewhere to help get that across.
Where do you see yourself going with your photography? In times of the future and the stories that you'd like to communicate, you have a burning desire to any what story on mine that you'd like to do?
Well, there are a lot of things that are happening that interest me in a big, big way. Something that has bothered me for a long time is that many people who show some kind of an outward interest in people in need often do it for themselves, not really for the people. For example, you know, I've done in the last several months a whole lot of coverages in the socialist countries. And socialism or communism is always doing the big thing about, you know, for the people, we do all this for the people. But when you really get close to seeing what they're doing, they're not doing it for the people, they're doing it for themselves. And it's just, you have the right-wing dictators and you have the left-wing dictators. And basically, they all are doing those things for themselves rather than for the people. And the people are the ones who will struggle and suffer. In between, both sides kill them and all kind of things happen. They take away from them and say that, you know, we're dividing with everybody. Or the right-wing dictator takes it away and puts it in his own pocket, kind of thing. But they all put it in their pocket in a lot of different ways. And I'm very interested in trying to communicate more and more with what it's like to care for people, to try to assist people, but without any strings, not wanting to have something in return or demanding something in return. Of course, that's one of the things that's always bugging me about the church. You know, the old idea, I give you some clothes if you will promise to come to Sunday school on Sunday. Or the old rescue concept, mission concept, if you will be in the services tonight, we will give you a bed and something to eat tonight. Otherwise, forget it, kind of thing. And that, to me, is not only the like Christian concept, it's not even a human kind of concept that should be worked with, I think, for people, because we should do things because we care for people and because we do love them and because we're trying to reach them. That's why I'm interested in what we're discussing here, is because I feel that we want to find a channel to bring together the people who need assistance and the people who are willing to give assistance, just out of the purity of saying, I care for people, and I want to do it because I care for people, rather than I want to do it for political purpose, or I want to do it for religious purpose, or whatever. I just want to do it because I'm who I am and because I believe in people with needs. And it's at that level, at that point, that I would like to continue on doing. And I feel that in many ways that I've been able to find that place. There are times, of course, where some stories do it better, maybe because sometimes I'm able to do it better as a photographer, and maybe at other times the subjects are doing it better as subjects. But there are variations, there are hills and valleys in what I'm able to communicate at different times with that. But on just a general level, that's really what I am interested in doing and would like to continue doing. I think even the style that is a part of it. I remember even when I first began in photography, I had read, you know, about a saying, well, you need to establish a style for yourself if that's the thing that helps you to get established as a photographer. At that point, I wasn't quite understanding what a style is, and I was really struggling and searching, trying to find a style. And I remember the people who were processing my film and making the enlargements. One day I went by to pick up some enlargements. And I just went in and said, my name is Rutness Don, please, I'd like to pick up some on a prints. And so he said, well, I've been wanting to meet you. And then so it came his name. And he said, I've been noticing your style, and I like it real well. I never will forget that. It really shook me because I'm trying to find a style. And here's this guy liking my style, and I didn't even know I had one in it. And so I remember saying, I didn't want to just come out, you know, it was embarrassing to say, well, I don't know what my style is, please tell me. But I knew I wasn't going to leave without finding out. So what I did is I said, what is it you like about my style? And I thought that would help to get it across. And so then he started telling me that he noticed in my photographs that I had a love and an interest and a concern for people. And he just almost described my feelings to me, though he had never met me. That was the first time that he did it to the photographs. And that taught me a good lesson at that point, that you really, the direction, the sense that you go in, that you do develop a style out of your inner feelings and concerns. And, of course, I know that sometimes it's done through some form of a gimmick or whatever the styles are formed. But they're also the styles of just the direction that one wants to go to try to approach the situation.
How are you feeling about modern-day publications, basic magazines, and how they're treating subjects and stories? And do you think there's really a marketplace for the Eugene Smith of the 80s? Is it available on the
market? Compassionate character.
No, and yeah, I mean, for,
well,
you've come through the you know, the 50s and the 60s when, you know, the photo magazines were abundant and they were looking for some compassion. So what are you seeing today?
That's one of the things that I was going to talk about, you know, in this opening discussion to the group. It's a message I made on an Irish at a problem, and it's over, but I think I can remember pretty much all that I don't say that. We are living in a whole different age in regard to that compassionate experience. Of course, like in the 60s and in the 70s, it's the 70s, but real heavily in the 60s. And then it started tapering off in the 70s. You had things that were very important, like the race, of course, the equality of races, the working together, the partnership, and the belonging kind of thing. And it was during that time that I was very much involved in race, in many places in the South, border restoration, all kind of things. And then you had a period of time where Appalachia was important. I mean, you just shoot anything on Appalachia, and the whole world wanted it because there was poverty and there was need. And that was during the time, you know, when there was a lot of discussion about war on poverty kind of thing. And everybody was concerned about it. It was almost like insane. Which was the only thing that really bothered me, that it was again, almost like people were doing it. In many cases, it was almost like they were doing it for themselves because it was the end thing, you know. It was a very nice thing to do and the right thing to do during that period. And you also had the swinging over, like, from the rural world into the urban, and what that was doing, affecting, and I did a lot of stuff on that, how the rural people were having to get, reestablished and resettled in the urban world, and what was happening to them also, almost enslaving them during a time. Well, it was during that period when all of these things are so much involved that you could almost mention that I want to do this as a compassionate person. And, of course, you also had a lot of the very famous photographers to come out of that period of time the Smith would be a good example of that, began back in the 50s. But it was during that whole process at times, as well as many others. Robert Frayn giving his concepts about America and what America is and the needs of people and the struggles of people and all this. But then there was a point where it peaked out. And people all at once got tired of doing good things, or doing right things, or of showing an in-depth kind of concern and interest, compassion for people. I think there were several reasons for that. One is because a lot of what was done was almost a paternal kind of thing, almost without realizing. Even some of the leaders, it was a paternal kind of thing. Another problem was they were very political kind of things. Then on the other side, you had the church, of course, who felt that their only responsibility was just to preach the gospel, which meant just getting people to become Christians, and that was their end of responsibility. And so you had all of those drawbacks. That's even the reason why they didn't get more involved, like in the race issue and things like that. They somehow did not see there was a moral issue. And plus the fact that they didn't want to upset the apple cart kind of thing, a lot of them didn't like pastors and leaders were afraid to do that. So it really became the responsibility of photographers and the writers to do it during that time of the media. And then you had you had the right-wing groups who were afraid that their whole world was crumbling because they've been able to control in other ways, and now, you know, they're seeing it fall. And then you had the left-wing groups, even in, like, in the voter registration, I run into this quite often, that what they were trying to do is they were trying to promote their own political philosophy rather than the people, but they were using the people, really, is what it wound up to. No longer. And so then all these people felt that they had squeezed out of him that this was as much as they wanted, and then that was it, and they left. So Appalachia, you know, was left where it was. The race thing was left where it was. And so because of all these things, then people came to the place of feeling, I'm tired of doing good, whatever that means, or I'm tired of doing the right thing. I'm tired of speaking about it. I'm tired of going out and getting my head banged over from somebody else that's disagreeing with me and that kind of thing. And so there came a slump. And so when the slump came, the media, always going with the crowds, or most of the time going with the crowds, began moving away from that too, because they could see that the people were interested in other things. And since they were interested in other things, they started searching out what those things might be, which of course means they got more involved in world affairs that's happening and in the countries of the world today, where all of these things, the whole world seems to be in uproar and unrest. So they became involved there to report what's happening. And they also became involved in the world of entertainment, like TV and motion film stars and musicians, famous musicians, because the people were swinging more to that kind of idol worship of these individuals. And of course, TV was really catching on more and more and more. And so they used that as a swing away from doing that which was right in relation to people and their needs. And today, where I think we are is that most publications don't have an interest, a concern. And they base it on the fact of saying that people don't have an interest, a concern. I really feel this is wrong. I feel that they've developed their own stance and their own philosophy. And they're trying to use that then in that direction, and so people are following it. Now, there was a time when the people were tired and they just backed off for a while, but I think that that there is a time, and I think there's a void now, because people do care. They care a lot. The King family thing is an example that I have no idea how many people have told me that when they read that story that they just listened to Klein. And when they told me that, they didn't know anyone else had said that to me. But many, many people, I mean, like all over the country, they have just tell me that. No? And the people out of the country, like I mentioned earlier, in some of the countries that they, and sometimes they would say, I'd just sit there and reread the story and look at the pictures. And I couldn't get away from it. It was such a moving thing. So it seems that what is happening today is that everybody is rushed off into other directions, and the people in their needs are just left there. And the people who want to have compassion and do have compassion no longer have a medium to help them to communicate that passion or to do something with that compassion that they have for people.
Do you think that the photographers out there are capable of turning out this compassionate orb now?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. In fact, I think there are a lot of them who are interested in that. I think that there are some who are almost guilty or aren't guilty because they feel that that photography has just become nothing more than making money for them. But I feel that they try to squelch that guilt by just simply saying that nobody would use my work anyway. And I think if there is a place where they feel that somebody will use the work and that it can communicate what they would like to say, I think that there are a lot of intent. There also are photographers, some photographers who today are doing some things. I was noticing recently an article in Light, where they're doing some things on people with great needs that several of these photographers are having problems themselves. And I think it's not so much because they're interested in the people as it is that they identify only with those people. One photographer I know who has become quite well known just in photographing people with mental problems. And there's nothing wrong with that if it's used to show that, but the photographer you know, has maybe some problems too. Who knows? I have some feelings just knowing something about a survivor that maybe this is true. But that kind of thing happens. There are photographers who do things because of their own personal problems. And I'm not saying that that's wrong either, because sometimes the abnormal helps us to do some things that are worthwhile and workable, whereas the normal person just doesn't care one way or the other. They're just kind of happy and free with life, and they just move. And so it takes an abnormal person sometimes to do, to communicate abnormal situations and feelings.
He did a lot of that, man. I'm like, ain't going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Sure. Exactly.
They go in with that feel, and they're healing with their own pop.
That's right. And for, I think photographers do that same thing. It's kind of the thing. And as I said, I'm not saying that that's wrong. I don't mean to apply that at all, except whenever the photographer takes it over, you know, that I think is a little too far. But as long as that photographer can keep enough under control to really go in and say those things. For example, I could look at my own self and say that may be the reason why that I identify with people who have needs and people who are very poor, people who are not able to do for themselves what others are able to do. And out of that, I'm sure there's some kind of reason for that. But as long as if I can steer it, you know, in the right way and use it for the right purpose, well, let's take the Kings, for example. If I can do it in such a way that I'm not trying to be paternal, or I'm not trying to be embarrassed about them, or I'm not trying to do it in some for my own purpose, but I'm doing it because those people have a dignity, and because they are my friends and I'm their friend, and because when I photograph them, I'm not trying to put them down, or I'm not trying to lift myself. I'm just trying to show a situation that is important to me and is necessary to me to show somebody else, and hopefully, you know, to get some good accomplished out of it.
How do you maintain your personal excitement and drive? It seems like a lot of photographers go through that up and down period. And how do you maintain your status quo of your feelings about your work and your photography? Or at least on the outside, you appear very cool, calm, and collected the last 10 years at Manhattan.
Well, that's probably one of the most difficult questions of all for me to answer. And the reason why I say that is, you'd be amazed how many photographers would ask me that question, and I've never been able to answer it. Because I think that there is a difficulty, and I understand that difficulty in the whole field. Artists have the same thing, I'm sure, and musicians have the same thing. And photographers have often said, you know, I have downs, and how do I get out of those downs and move, you know, into another direction. I do it, but, you know, how can I keep from that happening? But it seems to be a pretty typical, normal thing, if that's lunch, and I'm not sure if I should say normal. Well, yeah, I should say, because there's so many photographers who discuss that. It's got to be pretty much a normal thing in the world. You're right, the temperament in our whole area of activity. The reason why I can't answer it is because I don't have a problem with it. And I know it sounds really crazy, and I've often tried to explain for myself what happens is that first I have such a love for photography that it envelops my life. But now what I mean by that is that I love it because it is a means of communicating things that I want to say. And I love it only for that purpose. I don't love it because of its technical qualities, and I don't necessarily love it for just for its aesthetic qualities, even though that's fascinating to me and excites me. But I love it primarily because I feel that inside there are things that I want to say. And I think maybe the closest that I could get to trying to answer that is that through the last years, when I first started, I really had problems. I had terrible struggles. Sometimes I would get to where I hated photography with a passion because I couldn't make it say what I wanted to say, and I couldn't use it the way I wanted to use it. And I really had terrible hatred for photography. It was a love-hate thing. I couldn't live with it, and I couldn't live without it. And it just drove me crazy. And that went on for quite a period of time. But I think maybe the closest answer in the last years is that I have been able to work in areas where I could do what I wanted to do with photography. And that probably was the thing that helped me to keep from going up and down in it. There is also a problem with that, though, is that one has to be careful and has to be a self-starter. That's why a lot of photographers who work for institutions or who work for an organization like Onosawi or for a newspaper, any of that, is that if a photographer is not a self-starter, they will destroy themselves because they will fall back into the routine of saying, well, you know, if I do it, if I don't do it, I still draw a salary. And that's a very, very dangerous kind of thing. Whereas a freelancer does not have that luxury. A freelancer's got to say, you know, I just got to get with it. That's how it is. And I don't have the luxury of falling back and saying, well, today I can do it good, tomorrow I can do it bad. The only thing I can do is to do it right every time I do it. And I feel the same way about that in the whole world of photography, whether it's institutional or whatever. And I'm using the word institutional not necessarily as a religious thing, but as an organization, as a newspaper, as a staffer on a magazine or whatever. For example, somebody was talking about Paul Fusco when Look was doing real well, and said that Paul Fusco had some excellent things going for him. And that was that he was, that as a photographer, he had a strong institution backing him. And because of the institution backing him, he could go out and do the things that he wanted to do and that he felt that he should do, and that that was a good way to do it. Well, that was true in Paul Fusco's life because Fusco was a self-started. But in another one, that institution could destroy somebody. Because if a person went in and they said, well, oh, if Fusco went in and said, well, I get my salary anyway, and so I won't even worry about, you know, how good a job or how bad a job I do. That's where newspaper photographers get in trouble, is that they fall into that kind of routine. And so their editors accept their bad work as well as their good work and keep giving them the salary checks. And so they wipe themselves out and destroy themselves on that very basis. But maybe it's a mixture that I never have paid any attention really to the fact that, let's say, I get a salary or that I receive a retainer from Black Star. And those things I never did pay that much attention to. It was more important to me, and I've always thought as a freelancer. I've never thought as a person working with a salary. It's always been a freelancer's kind of thing. That each time I pick up the camera, I've got to try it to do better than the last time. I may not do it, but I got to try at least if I can. Or if I go into a really boring situation like people sitting around in a group, you know, just sitting there talking, it gives me a challenge sometimes to say, well, how can I just take this, you know, this miserable, lousy situation and make it come alive? What can I do? Can I add elements of the room? Can I move back? Can I get up close to their expressive faces and get portions of them or what? And so doing that, rather than saying, you know, this is such a cruddy situation, I'm going to forget it, that's one of the things that I've always tried to use it as a challenge rather than a defeat.
Right. You speak of your early years and your love-hate relationship mm-hmm. because you couldn't get your photography to say mm-hmm. what it was you wanted to say, and now you're saying that you feel very capable of doing that. Was there anything in those middle years that clicked that all of a sudden you were able to mm-hmm. make your photography speak? What brought about that change?
Yeah, well, there's a weird thing that happened. that I have only really been willing to talk about it very much more recently. Sometimes I would mention it to someone who had an interest in it, but a very weird thing happened to me there that brought about that change. But then I read a book that helped me to understand what happened to me. But
what was the name of
the book? Courage to Create. Marello Promé, right. In the beginning, the problem was, there were several problems. One was a lack of experience. And that, of course, would be true of us all in the beginning is a lack of experience, trying to struggle to find how to say things. And there's all that freshness and all that that potential out there, but you can't get a hold of it. And that was the thing that just drove me crazy. And then it was a thing of struggling and trying to find and trying to find and trying to find. All the time, you know, I just go night and day. And if I got a chance for an assignment, I was going to cover the assignment if I had anything to do it. You know, it was just that kind of thing. I had to do it. I couldn't keep from doing it. But in the course of those things, I made a lot of mistakes. And the editors they would help me. They were concerned about it enough that they would help me and give me an idea. And what I would do is I would learn something, maybe just one little thing from one assignment, but I just kind of stored away in my mind. And then later I'd learn something from another assignment, and I just kind of stored away. And I kept trying to build a reservoir, almost without realizing that, but a reservoir. And what was bothering me is that I could not, in the photographing, I was always trying to use gimmicks, not necessarily trying to use gimmicks, but I didn't know any other way to do it. You know, like framing something with a tree, with the leaves of a tree, or climbing up real high on a ladder and shooting down, or lying on the floor and shooting up, and all of those different things to try to do that. Much, much later, when I look back at some of my earlier pictures, I was surprised at how good I still feel about some of those early pictures. Now, not the one of the others, but some of them that I liked the most during that time. And I think it was because every once in a while, I would do something that I really felt that I wanted to do, but I didn't know how to put it down. I didn't know how to verbalize it, or I didn't know how to see it, except I would see it in a moment and get it, and then I would love it the way it was. And now I look back, and that was what I was really trying to do then, but I didn't know how to do it. That was the problem. Okay, so what happened was there was all that struggle and that working, trying to work through the gimmicks, and trying to be able to stand flat-footed and to photograph in such a way with expressions and moods and feelings and all of those things to pull the picture across and to make it as strong as possible. But anyway, all of that struggle was just a real horrible, horrible struggle. Many times, you know, I think I always want to go to the pawn shop and just say, you know, how much do you give me for this mess? I just want to get out of it. And then, you know, I'd just say, no, you know, I can't do that. It's just impossible. I got it for that. And so I would try again, and then I'd fail, and it just drove me crazy. But I was photographing a thing. I even remember the magazine. It was at Oak Ridge, and I was on a scientist, a black scientist, who used handmade equipment to teach scientific methods and principles. And it was right in the middle of that assignment. That's the strange part that I'm talking about a lot of times I don't mention because it sounds so weird. But it was right in the middle of that assignment that all at once it was just like an immediate, like the snapping thing, the whole world just opened up. And that I was able to see lines and design and composition like I'd never been able to see it before. It was just absolutely unbelievable. It was like an immediate religious experience. And that's why it was so weird that I wouldn't mention to anyone, because it would sound strange. But anyway, when that happened, I knew the moment that it happened, and I was so fascinated that in the shooting, it was just like a whole new world. And I remember I went back to the motel room at night, and I could hardly sleep because I was so fascinated. But I finished the assignment, and I sent it in. I came back home, and the next assignment, which I don't remember what it was, but that's our assignment, I was afraid to do it because I was afraid that had been lost, that it just happened in that moment in time had been lost. And I was very, very nervous about it. But I went and did to do the assignment, and I remembered that it worked again the same way, and it was just fascinating. So then I did the next assignment as well. And one morning I was eating breakfast. We were living in Tennessee, and I was eating breakfast, and I got a ring on my phone, and that was from Phil Rosen at the agency at Black Star. And he said, "Don, we want to ask you a question." And I said, "Okay." He said, "You know, when you were shooting that story at Oak Ridge on the black scientist, Rebony?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, right in the middle of that story, something happened to your photography." And he said, "And the next two stories that you've done, the same thing has happened in them." And he said, "We have discussed it, and it's really strange, and we don't know what happened to you." And so I'm just calling you to ask you what happened. Well, I almost dropped my teeth, you know, because I told nobody, you know, it was so weird. And so I said, well, Phil, I really don't know what happened. All I can tell you is that I know the moment that it happened, and I never enjoyed photography so much in my life. I don't think I'll ever be able to get away from it anymore. But I do know the moment that it happened. But then I never talked about it very much to anyone after that until this book explained to me that what had happened is that I had stored driving and driving and driving, and I stored those things away so much that all at once what happened is they were just kind of released. And everything I had striven for and had looked for and trying to do, that somehow they just all came together in that split moment in time. And so they said that sometimes it happens with other people, it will happen by levels and steps. But they just all hit at one time.
You mentioned that you had fear that maybe wouldn't work on the next assignment. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have that vision that you had.
Right. Uh-huh.
Well, what kind of feelings do you have now when all of a sudden you're asked to go to Zimbabwe or to Brazil for a month and you've got a very big area, a very big story to cover? What kind of emotions are you feeling? And, I mean, do you still have that fear or, you know, are you revved up? Or how are you feeling? How do you approach your assignments today?
Okay. There are a lot of times when I do have fear, but those come most of the time when I haven't picked up a camera for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. The longer the time in between, I really have a fear. The fear is, you know, I feel, well, can I pull it off this time? Will I be able to do it? Or if I'm working for, if some magazine, like some magazine I've been working for, you know, like to the agency, something like that, and the story doesn't seem to have a lot of strength to it, and that bothers me and makes me nervous. Again, if I'm working pretty close to last few days I shot something, it doesn't bother me that much. But there is a feeling of nervousness almost always. It really is a part of my being prepared, I guess, of my saying, okay, you know, I'm ready to go again kind of thing. I don't feel nervous so much about feeling that I will not be able to come away with some things. But it's a nervousness of feeling, will I be able to come away with what I really want? Will I be able to take a routine kind of situation and come away with strong pictures but still be responsible for those? You know, responsible so far as truth and fact and all that, and doing the right thing. And that way, there is always a tension. For example, I can go out and work for a month. And sometimes I'll be a little tired when I go in at night, but very seldom when I'm tired at all. A lot of times I joke with the writers because they just go in dead, you know, and I'm just, you know, I'm okay. But what happens is I'm keyed to a point that I can work for that period of time. But then when the end comes, I have to have a while that I actually need and want to back away from photography for a few days. I don't want to pick up a camera for a few days. Not that I dislike it, but it's because the tension has been so strong that now I need that period of relaxing in between. But then after 2 or 3 days, then I'm back ready again and get real restless to want to do it again.
Steve, any questions?
And Aaron?
Well, I don't know how to write. How can you have this
right now?
With every assignment, opposed to the things you aren't set. First of all, to give people a voice or having a look at. Now, how can you go out and shoot a story, put an insurance dump in, opposed to going out and doing a social and that story?
How do you separate your assignment and your self-assignment?
Okay. Well,
do that tend to mention?
A lot of that has to do with a degree of what I enjoy doing the most. If, let's say, if it's an insurance thing, first of all, I basically like pukeling. And I found that for me that no matter who a person is, that you get it talking to them, they got some interesting things about themselves, their background or what they're doing now. And usually, even if it's you're shooting the pictures now, you're doing it because they are a little unusual. You wouldn't be doing it in the first place. There is something that makes them a little out of the ordinary for a publication to say, I'm interested in this person. Now, sometimes that's not true, but I would say that at least 90 to 95% of the time it is true. Okay, so enjoy the part of getting to know them, and also the challenge of trying to make strong pictures of them in what sometimes may be a very routine or even a monotonous kind of situation. The reason for that is that I know that if I can pull that one off and do a good job there, then later in things that I personally enjoy doing and have a strong feeling about personally, then what I learn from that one, which is always true that I think we learn from everything to do, that things that I learned there, I would be able to apply them later on. And so there is a form of enjoyment. There are degrees of enjoyment, but I actually do enjoy the different things that I do. I don't know if that answers for you.
I guess I'm asking that because of my own. Well, that's all right, but there's a lot of
have those feelings.
All right, I have a problem. You know, I don't know if other people have it. I have a problem going out here and just making money with my work. I don't even want to do that. You know, I want to do it because it's something coming from inside of me that I want to say, whether anybody wants to use it or not. And not just as a commercial venture that I'm going out here shooting this assignment and I'm going to make $500.
And
I have a real problem with that.
Okay.
I don't know if others do or not.
Yeah,
that is a problem that people have quite often. In my case, I can only speak, for myself there. And that is that always in my shootings and my work, and that's all the way from the time when I first began, when I would have to, that's why I dislike McDonald's and Burger Chefs today, where I would go out day after day after day after day and get hamburgers at McDonald's, breakfast, lunch, and that night for supper, because I couldn't afford anything else. I didn't have anything else. And sometimes I'd even buy juices, grape juice and orange juice, to drink the meals because I didn't have any money to do it with. Well, to me, I was not doing it for the money then. I was doing it because it was something I had to do. And that has been true even today, even if someone is paying me a real high price or something, I'm not really even doing it for the money. I don't even think about it in those terms. I do it because it is something that I want to do, in the world in which I live. And that has helped me in that situation because of what I can learn there, the people I get to know, something about them, and it's an education for me and an enjoyment for me. And I don't, but that is a problem, and I understand that.
But do you take your assignments more for a visual challenge?
Yeah. Right.
Than for a price tag, is what
right.
I'm saying.
Yeah, always it's been that way. Uh-huh. I work just as hard on what I shoot for for the Foreign Mission Board. There is no variation. I work just as hard on what I'm doing there as I would if I was shooting, for a geographic essay. I try just as hard, geo, or life,
or even a big ad campaign where the day rate was 3 or 4 times.
Yeah,
an editorial.
Uh-huh. Right. Uh-huh. I wouldn't feel as comfortable, I think, in the ad. Because of so much of the setting lamp and the lightings, but that's just a personal thing. Mm-hmm. Me there.
And you don't see the ad thing as an exploitation of people. Bother you?
Well, first of all, I've never done that much on ads, and so I can't really speak. I have done things, yes, in the world of ads, but not that much. And so it's never been in me
if you had to deal with
it. No, I've not had to deal with that. So I don't know what to say or how to say it at this point.